Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I mentioned to you last week my newest crackpot theory, which is that the sound of the letter S, as we've known it, is in 100 years will have disappeared. Will have done disappeared. Yeah, because I care about language so much. Will have done disappeared. I got in the interim, in the intervening days, emails and tweets from various listeners. And let's keep the conversation going, huh? To the effect that this is imputing this to one or another socioeconomic group in the country, as if that's really where this problem lies. If a problem indeed can lie, or if the truth can lie, for that matter. But I was attending a conference here in New Orleans this week, which would have put the lie to those assertions. It was a conference on historic preservation of all things, and one of the speakers, majority member of our population, academic from the Northeast, so not a Southerner, not a minority of any sort, said in short order these words and pronounced them this way: district, street, strong, struck, and demonstrated. So, yes, they're kids, 100 years from now, we'll find it hard to believe we had a sound called S. Except when you see stuff on screen that you don't like, because that seems to be going well. The S, that's going to survive, ladies and gentlemen. News of AFAC. Confidential U.S. assessments, which the State Department tried to hide from the public, apparently, show nearly all Afghan cabinet ministries are woefully ill-prepared to govern after the U.S. withdraws its troops. The reports often describe the gaps in knowledge, capability, and safeguards as, quote, critical, unquote, and describe an infrastructure in danger of collapsing if or when left to its own accord. This is a report from the Washington Times. Yes, I know. The Washington Times explains why you may not have heard about it. The State Department reports from the USAID agency, obtained by the Washington Times through Freedom of Information Act requests, paint a sobering portrait, says the Times, about the impact of the billions of dollars the U.S. has spent on nation building over the past decade. The report suggests the U.S. spending has yet to create a sustainable civilian government in Afghanistan, and in some cases has been diverted to corrupt politicians or extremists looking to destabilize the country. USAID officials told the Times that the risks of corruption and waste associated with trying to develop a government in Afghanistan have long been known, and U.S. taxpayers must be patient before they see further returns on their aid investments. Sounds like Warren Buffett all of a sudden. Further, USAID spokesman Matt Herrick told the Times, quote, we strongly reject all claims we've improperly withheld information. Questions remain, says the Times reporter, about why the secret assessments conducted by USAID officials in the last couple of years are just coming to light. They're called Stage 2 Risk Assessment Reports. They focus specifically on 7 Afghan government ministries: finance, mining, electric utilities, communications, education, health, and agriculture is all. USAID concluded outright 6 of those ministries, that's 6 out of 7, simply cannot be trusted to manage aid from U.S. taxpayers without a dangerous risk that the money will fall victim to fraud, waste, abuse, or outright theft. I'd choose theft. I'd say give them the money. Only in 1 of the 7 cases, the Ministry of Finance and auditors conclude the systems were adequate to properly manage and account for Washington money. Even with that conclusion, USAID auditors identified 26 risks for fraud and waste at the finance ministry. 3 high, the rest critical. The Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction and USAID have fought bitterly in public in recent weeks over whether the U.S. exerted enough safeguards over our spending and whether the State Department has tried to hide the blemishes inside each Afghan ministry. The Special Inspector General, whom you will hear on this broadcast in a few weeks, he used the assessments as the basis for his scathing report in January, highlighting rampant claims of fraud and abuse across the ministries. And then wrote a letter to USAID accusing the agency of seeking at virtually every turn to block the information from becoming public. So, ladies and gentlemen, just, you know, the problem is you're just not being patient enough, you know? What is wrong with you and your expectations? And what the frack? Oil fields are spinning off thousands of tons of low-level radioactive trash. We've talked about this on this broadcast, and by we, I mean me, as the U.S. drilling boom leads to a surge in illegal dumping and states debate how much landfills can safely take. This is from Bloomberg News, not Mike. State regulators are caught between environmental and public health groups demanding more regulation and the industry, which says it's already taking proper precautions. Scientists are debating the impact of small amounts of radiation on cancer risks. The EPA says there's not enough evidence to say what level is safe. So, have some more. Left to police the way, state governments are increasing their scrutiny of well operators. Pennsylvania and West Virginia are revising levels for acceptable radiation levels and strengthening disposal rules. West Virginia is doing that. Imagine. North Dakota is doing the same after finding those piles of garbage bags filled with radioactive debris you heard about on this broadcast 2 or 3 weeks ago. We have many more wells producing at an accelerating rate, and for each of them, there's a higher volume of waste, says a professor of geochemistry at Duke, who studied the issue. Without proper handling, we're actually building up a legacy of radioactivity in hundreds of points where people have had leaks or spills around the country. Now, here's the irony, ladies and gentlemen. While fracking waste leaves us with more radioactivity, nuclear plants, as you'll hear when we get to the subject of nukes a little later on, are increasingly being subjected to higher levels of scrutiny about their seismic risk, the safety of nuclear plants in case of earthquakes. What's causing more earthquakes in the United States? Fracking. Thank you. It's a system. And a new study has found that a small number of gas wells are releasing significant quantities of methane into the air even before they're fracked. What? The paper published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Yes. Yes, they have proceedings. Yes, they proceed, is the result of measurements of methane made by flying an airplane over parts of the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania. They detected a significant regional flux of methane, that powerful greenhouse gas, coming from an area of gas wells in southwestern Pennsylvania. Very high concentrations in a particular region were observed. They circled the pads, the individual well pads, to verify those were the methane sources. To their surprise, researchers learned the wells had not yet been fracked and were not producing gas. So what's the deal? 1% of the wells. Additional credence has been lent to the idea that a small subset of wells, drilling processes, and equipment is probably responsible for a large percentage of the methane emissions. This is often referred to as the fat tail problem, that just a small subset of wells or pieces of equipment is responsible for the majority of leaks. Additional evidence for this idea has been reported in other studies, says Stephen Hamburg of the Environmental Defense Fund. He and his co-authors, the author of the new study, suggest the reason for high emissions from those wells was either the fact that drillers encountered methane from shallow coal pockets near the surface, or that wells were drilled using a method calling underbalanced drilling, which allows fluids and gas to come up to the surface during the drilling process. But, you know, your daddy told you, watch out for the fat tail. Hello, welcome to the show.
Fire!
From the shores of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Just asking. On the Sunday morning Yak shows, Easter Sunday, Reverend Franklin Graham, the Catholic prelate of Washington, D.C., those are the two I noticed. The mainstream media always insists there are two sides to every story. Where were the atheists? Now, news from the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet.
Our friend the Atom.
Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addy the Atom, our friend, what is that on your head?
It's the world's smallest Easter bonnet, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is. I was just asking.
I know.
Dateline, Vienna. Tell me if you've heard this.
Well, I've heard Dateline, Vienna before.
Not that. Iran has acted to cut its most sensitive nuclear stockpile by nearly 75%. Iran, ladies and gentlemen, in implementing a landmark agreement with world powers. A planned facility will need to fulfill the six-month deal has been delayed. This according to a report from the UN. The monthly from the IAEA, which has a pivotal role in verifying Iran is living up to its part of the accord. The update makes clear Iran so far is undertaking the agreed steps to curb its nuclear program. You've heard this, of course, right?
It didn't get through the bonnet.
As a result, Iran is gradually gaining access to some previously blocked overseas funds. Under the breakthrough agreement that took effect in January of this year, Iran halted some parts of its disputed nuclear program in exchange for a limited easing of international sanctions. The IAEA update showed that Iran had, as stipulated by the agreement with the U.S., France, Germany, Britain, China, and Russia, diluted half of its higher-grade enriched uranium reserve to a fissile content less prone to bomb proliferation. So they got $450 million from Japan. Iran has also continued to convert the other half of its holding of uranium gas to into oxide for making reactor fuel. Together, Iran has in the last 3 months either diluted or fed into the conversion process a total of almost 340 pounds of its higher-grade uranium gas. That should be seen as a positive development by Western powers as it lengthens the time Iran would need for any effort to produce a nuclear weapon.
That's the good news file.
That is, you'd think. Dateline Santa Fe, federal auditors have come down on the nation's nuclear weapons complex, including Los Alamos and Sandia Labs, for failing to keep track of nuclear weapons designs.
Did they get out to Fashion Week?
No. Didn't get to Fashion Week, and for not ensuring that parts used in the nuclear stockpile are reliable.
Well, they got to be reliable. They're in the stockpile.
The National Nuclear Security Administration sites could not always locate as-built product definitions or associated drawings for nuclear weapons and components in its official weapons repositories, the audit states. This is from the Department of Energy Inspector General. It was also concerned about some of the non-conforming parts being used in nuclear weapons.
Well, we like nonconformance. We like originality, don't we?
Not in nuclear weapons, I don't think. Without the proper information and safeguards, NNSA loses confidence in its nuclear weapons stockpile, the document adds. In one example of the problem cited in the report, 11 nuclear warheads delivered to the Navy in 2010 had to be returned because material used to prevent an electrostatic discharge from accidentally setting off the main charge of the weapon had been damaged during production.
Phew. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. An NNSA spokesman declined comment beyond the official report. Just non-standard stuff in nuclear weapons is all.
Don't look at me. I'm just an atom.
Dateline Prague, Czech state-run power utility CEZ. It's not Pez, it's Kez. Says it has canceled a plan to build two more nuclear reactors at the Temelin power station because falling electricity prices have made the multi-billion-dollar project less feasible.
Oh, I remember him. Who? Less feasible.
U.S.-based Westinghouse led and a consortium led by Russia's Atomstroyexport were bidding to build the reactors. Now neither will. The U.S. Embassy in Prague said in a statement the U.S. government was, quote, deeply disappointed by the decision.
How disappointed?
Deeply.
Wow. They're not deeply disappointed by all that much.
No, they're disappointed by a lot. The statement Thursday came a day after the government refused to provide financial guarantees for the plan.
That is deeply disappointing.
Top government leaders from both Russia and the United States had traveled to Prague to lobby the Czech government to approve their competing offers. Maybe that's what we got against Russia. I'll get to that later. Dateline Fukushima, over 200 tons of radioactive water was erroneously pumped into a basement at the Fukudaiichi plant between April 10th and 13th of this week.
It's this week, right?
Yeah. After a partial meltdown, 2011, water has been continuously poured into the reactor cores to cool them. The water falls into basements and is then pumped out into specially constructed storage tanks because it's been irradiated. But TEPCO says for unknown reasons, the pump flow was reversed on those days and the water was pumped back into the basement.
What could go wrong?
Dateline Okuma, Japan, the manager of the Fuk nuclear power plant, admits to embarrassment that repeated efforts have failed to bring under control the problem of radioactive water after 8 months. TEPCO has been fighting a daily battle against contaminated water. The prime minister's government pledged $500 million last year to tackle the issue. Progress has been limited.
$500 million's not nearly enough. I'd say give them the other half.
Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing to admit, but there are certain parts of the site where we don't have full control, said Akira Ono.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. He was referring to the latest blunder, channeling contaminated water to the wrong building, as you just heard. Ono also acknowledged that many difficulties may have been rooted in TEPCO's focus on speed since the disaster. Quote, it may sound odd, but this is the bill we have to pay for what we've done in the past 3 years. But we were pressed to build tanks in a rush and may not have paid enough attention to quality. We need to improve quality from here, unquote. What are you thinking?
Never too late.
Yeah, me too. Never too late to improve quality after you've built it. Dateline, that's called fixing the plane while you're flying it?
I've heard of that.
Dateline Plymouth, Massachusetts, the owner of Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station, is being required to spend almost $5 million over the next 3 years to prove the Plymouth plant and the pools where it stores spent fuel rods could stand up to tremors from regional earthquakes. Like they might be getting if they were fracking there.
Big if.
Big if. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission had required nuclear plants owners in the eastern and central United States to submit hazard risk reports based on updated seismic data by the end of last month. It also required if seismic activity were found to have increased considerably, plants would have to do further study. Updated seismic data concluded that Pilgrim could feel the effects of earthquakes as far away as 400 miles. Previous estimate had been 200 miles.
Let's go back to the previous estimate.
Wonder how far away they are from Pennsylvania. New wind and solar plants generate cheaper low-carbon electricity than the latest nuclear reactors.
Who says that?
A study.
Who did the study?
Mercator Foundation and the European Climate Foundation.
What are they involved in?
Promoting action on climate change. Anyway, they indicate wind and solar will lead a global push for green energy. Newly built wind and solar with natural gas as a backup can make power a fifth cheaper than nuclear backed by gas, the study by consultant Prognos AG shows. Excluding the backup generation, renewables produce power 50% cheaper than nuclear, according to the study. Gas-fired power is used when demand exceeds generation available for wind, solar, and nuclear. You're not saying anything.
I'm thinking about my bonnet.
The government withheld findings, the Japanese government, on estimated radiation exposure for Fuk returnees for 6 months, even though levels exceeded the long-term target of 1 millisievert a year at more than half of the surveyed locations. This from the Asahi Shimbun.
I have to admit, that's my favorite Shimbun.
Individual radiation doses were estimated to be beyond 1 millisievert a year, at 24 of the 43 surveyed sites. The revelation comes just 2 weeks after the central government lifted the evacuation order for the Miyakoji district in which some of these sites were located. So they just delayed by half a year and fessing up to the dosage levels.
Things happen. Delays happen.
Delays happen. Let's work on quality, shall we?
You got it.
Clean, cheap, safe, too. Low-quality Demeter, our friend, the Atom. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to raid the trades for you. As Eddie goes parading in his bonnet.
Look for me on the street.
Yeah, I will. From National Mortgage News, Ginnie Mae nixes Bank of America mortgage servicing transfer. We'll read it and try to understand it. For you. Ginnie Mae, the government national mortgage association. So it's one of those quasi-public, or it's like Fannie or Freddie Mac, another one of those, except it doesn't buy mortgages. Anyway, Ginnie Mae has halted the transfer of mortgage servicing rights from Bank of America to a non-bank servicer. You've heard about that. The banks are dumping the servicing of mortgages, which means collecting the payments and running the foreclosures, if necessary. Because why? Because the bank is missing documents such as recorded mortgages and titled policies on the underlying home loans. Yes, this, again, still. Ted Tozer, the president of Ginnie Mae, said he has held up the transfer of servicing rights by B of A, quote, for an extended period, unquote, because the bank is not complying with agency guidelines that require all mortgage documents be delivered to custodians in a timely manner. These are not building custodians, by the way. Quote, issues are coming up now because documents are missing. It's a new phenomenon with the major banks getting out of the servicing business. We don't want to transfer the risk to a new servicer. He says it's unclear how widespread the problem of missing documents is. He doesn't want to single out B of A. I can't say if it's just B of A or not, he says. Banks have been pulling back from the mortgage servicing business because they don't want to handle defaulted legacy loans from years past. Those subprime loans gone bad. And because they're now required to have higher levels of capital, so it's more expensive for them to hold these rights. Large banks have been selling portfolios of mortgages to non-bank specialists like Ocwen. You heard about their failure to abide by the rules for servicing recently on this broadcast. Regulatory scrutiny, it's called. This, I'm going to stop reading for a moment to remind you, this problem of missing documents has been at the heart of the foreclosure mess since 2008, when Eve Smith of Naked Capitalism first alerted us on this broadcast to it. Approval for the sale of Ginnie servicing may contain certain pre-sale document review requirements, which create incremental costs, says Bank of America. For now, the government National Mortgage Association is trying to assess the magnitude of the problem of missing documents. It's now going to send letters to about 10 of the largest mortgage servicers, including J.P. Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo. As to how far the issue is, we're not really sure, says Tozer. Shoddy document practices have plagued the largest mortgage servicers for years. The robo-signing of foreclosure documents ultimately forced the five largest servicers, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, to sign a $25 billion national mortgage settlement in early 2012. Most of that money was air. They don't say that here. I'm saying that. And I can prove it. Problems with missing documents resurfaced recently in a program Ginnie created a dozen years ago before the mortgage crisis after some of the largest servicers asked for authority to quickly transfer servicing rights. Back then, these banks never sold servicing. Servicing was gold, Tozer said. Some servicers have asked the agency to extend leniency or grant waivers under the program so that the documents don't have to be there. we're reluctant to do that because once they get sold, the servicing can get sold a second time or more. We're taking this opportunity now, says Tozer, to make sure we know who has what. At issue is primarily what happens when a loan defaults or goes into foreclosure, says Tozer. That's the major issue. These attorneys are getting so creative in their foreclosure defense, you have to make sure all loose ends are tied up on the defaulted loans, he says. Yeah, before you throw somebody out of their house, tie up the loose ends, babe. And public television, this is from Current, the trade of public broadcasting. Public television's March pledge drive raised nearly $43 million for 141 local stations, an increase of nearly 15.5% from last year's spring fundraiser. A report tracking program performance at 33 stations reports Susie Orman's Financial Solutions for You was the top performing pledge drive show, garnering a total of more than $7 million, according to pledge data compiled by PBS. Shows featuring self-help guru Wayne Dyer and nostalgic music filled out PBS's ranking of the top programs generating the most income from on-the-air fundraising. David Perlmutter's Brain Change was the second-ranked show, distributed by Virginia-based Executive Program Services. It's been running strong for public TV stations over the past two fund drives. Nearly 90% of PBS member stations picked it up for the March pledge drive. That's such good news, isn't it? Only happens when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
I'm so close to you, baby, but I'm so far away. There's a silence between us, and there's so much to say. You're my strength, you're my weakness. You're my faith, you're my doubt. We gotta meet in the middle to work this thing out. More love. I can hear our hearts crying. More love. I know. That's all we need, more love. The flow in between us, and take us and hold us, and lift us above, if there's ever an answer, it's more love. We're afraid to be idle, so we fill up the days. We run on a treadmill, keep slaving away. Until there's no time for talking about trouble in mind. And the doors are all closed between your heart and mine. More love. I can hear our hearts crying. More love. I know that's all we need. More love. Us, to take us and hold us and lift us above. If there's ever an answer, it's more love. This
is Le Show, and now.
If you want me to love you, all that you must do is just say so.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, last week, you got to be careful what you ask for in the radio business, or I guess in show business generally. Because sometimes you'll actually get it. Not very often, in my experience, but just often enough to be surprising. And this week was one of those times. I mentioned last week the apparent paucity of examples of people, interviewees, beginning their answers with the word so. And you, the listening audience, you in public broadcasting, have come through remarkably well with a spectacular a set of examples. We have a Solapalooza, a so-tacular, a so-fest, as we might say in New Orleans, not presented by Shell this week. So let's begin with, first of all, very valuable information about the new flaw in secure internet computing, the Heartbleed flaw.
So how serious is this? Some reports say that this could affect as much as two-thirds of the entire internet.
So that's two-thirds of some of the most important parts of the internet.
And so how much would that be for somebody who's not too familiar with all the technical aspects of the internet?
So in the top 1 million most visited sites, about almost half of them support HTTPS at this point.
And then we're hearing a lot about OpenSSL. What is that?
So OpenSSL is a very important piece of software.
And that is where we are finding this problem?
Yes. So this is a very, very fundamental problem.
Would you imagine those websites are vulnerable to this?
So first of all, it's not just credit card numbers.
So that has happened. So let's say that you are a Yahoo email user. Mm-hmm. What would you do?
So Yahoo, I think at this point has fixed the problem as far as we know.
And then there's a lot of talk as to whether or not people should be changing their passwords everywhere where they have passwords online.
Uh-huh. Well, so it's certainly a good thing to do that.
How do you remember all the passwords?
Well, so you don't.
There's some evidence that perhaps maybe a Yahoo email account was hacked.
Well, so that would have happened after the public announcement of this bug.
So there's a public announcement, now hackers know.
You're right. So what happened was 2 days ago, this bug was released to the public.
Just changing your password now would be giving them that password again.
Yeah, so I think, on that front, we really have to rely on these websites.
I can't find anything, at least on the front page.
Mm-hmm. So a couple services. I believe Yahoo Mail has, and I believe a password service called LastPass has put out announcements.
What could the worst-case scenario be with this situation?
So the worst-case scenario is... the very worst case scenario is that someone has been able to use this bug.
And that's how we know about it now.
We also have, so once the details of the attack were published online, many, many people on the internet actually used it.
Do they need to change something?
So a lot of people use services like WordPress for their blog.
Is there any other websites that you would recommend?
All right, so ESS.org has published a blog post about this.
Okay. Now, we heard there sort of a landmark. Uh-huh. Well, so. Almost a concerto before she starts talking, before she starts saying something. Now, you did notice a little bit of the back-and-forth sewing, sort of a sewing bee, you might say, between the questioner and the answerer. That is to be trumped, however, by this example, a discussion of the discovery of a new exoplanet in the solar system.
So if Judy said this is 500 light years away, why is this discovery so consequential?
So while we won't be going there anytime soon, this really demonstrates that there are planets the same size as our own within the habitable zone of other stars.
So there's been a lot of attention today to the size of the planet being so Earth-like. Why does that matter?
So the one planet where we know there's life is our own.
So let's do a thought experiment for our audience, if you will. What does life look like? What does it feel like while we're standing there?
So this planet orbits a star that is cooler than our own.
So let's say, just on the basic physics that we understand about Earth, if this is slightly larger, does that change the gravity and, for example, how we feel we weigh?
Yeah, so this one's very comparable to Earth.
What's the next telescope, and what is it going to look for?
So, as mentioned, you mentioned at the start, this star is about 500 light years away.
Okay. All right. Then we have time to put more so's in the sentence. Now, that was a nice sort of so a deux. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is the crown jewel in this week's SOFEST. The former CIA official, Mike Morrell, on being interviewed by Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose, you last heard him on this broadcast. You last heard his voice on this broadcast when he was heard emceeing the Coca-Cola stockholders meeting at Radio City Music Hall a few years ago, thereby violating the terms of his contract as a CBS News correspondent not to do commercial endorsements. Here he is interviewing Mike Morrell of the CIA.
What was your job when you first heard about Benghazi?
So I was the number two at the Central Intelligence Agency. I was the deputy director.
And how did you hear about it?
So I was traveling overseas.
What did they say?
So they woke me up the first time.
And so what did you do?
So what I did is we have an instant messaging capability.
Or you simply didn't know?
So at that point, we just didn't know.
What do you believe now in terms of the attack?
So what I believe is that there was little to no pre-planning.
What did he say?
So let me walk through the timeline here.
Okay.
So what
did the analyst say?
Yes. So what the analyst said, and there's a very interesting piece of this.
Perhaps his sources and his observational point is better.
So that's a very important question.
And that was incorporated into their final decision.
So, again, just to be precise here, because being precise is important.
And then there was an attack just happened to occur simultaneously or one after the seriatim.
So they were standing by their original language.
And did they rethink it and say yes?
So
what we now believe is?
So CIA analysts immediately said, I think we're wrong.
This was an attack. This was not a demonstration.
Yeah. So I think there are a couple of things that are important.
But and what did they change?
So they, for example, took out the word Al-Qaeda.
What else did you change?
So I took the word Islamic out.
Did he ask you to justify that?
No. So what's interesting is that...
What does Susan Rice see?
So what Susan Rice...
So where are we from what you've just described to me and what Susan Rice reads before she goes on a Sunday talk show?
So... The final piece of this story...
And is the White House at all involved in this?
Yeah, so the final piece of the story...
McCain?
Yes.
And Graham?
Yes.
Suggest you lied?
Yes. So, here's what happened.
What can you tell us about conduct?
So it's a great question.
It all leads, ladies and gentlemen, to one conclusion. The insertion of the word so at the beginning of interviewees' answers is a CIA plot.
So they say.
And now, because I heard this week it snowed in the Northeast United States, here's this.
Stretch right up, you can almost touch the sky. When
gasoline. Yeah, 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 yeah. That's your philosophy. That's your philosophy. In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up, almost touch the sky. When the weather is right, you've got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find. Drink, have a drive, and go and see what you can find. Have a drink, have a drive, and go out and see what you can find.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week President Obama held a little press conference kind of thing. Not that he has them all that often. It was sort of a notable event. And at the end of one answer to one of the few questions he took, he appended this.
I'm sorry. I'm going to say one last thing about this. Just because this does frustrate me. States that have chosen not to expand Medicaid for no other reason than political spite. You got 5 million people who could be having health insurance right now at no cost to these states. Zero cost to these states, other than ideological reasons they have chosen not to provide health insurance for their citizens.
No cost to these states. Zero cost, he said. Now, this is a guy who got burned saying, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan. This week, he says, zero cost for states to expand Medicaid. From Kaiser Health News, states have legitimate budget concerns, quoting the National Association of Medicaid Directors. Many state officials are already struggling to pay for the program. Typically, it's the largest or second largest state expense. Their future share, states have a share. First 3 years, the federal government pays 100%. After that, the states have to cost share. Their share may sound small. It represents billions in new spending that could require cutbacks of other more popular programs, such as education or transportation, or else raising taxes. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, projects states would pay approximately $73 billion, 7% of the cost of Medicaid expansion, between 2014 and 2022. The head of the National Association of Medicaid Directors and others also dispute the notion that the program is free in the early years, saying startup costs and the likelihood millions of people currently eligible for Medicaid but not enrolled will come forward as a result of publicity is sure to drive up state expenses. States will, for them, receive their traditional federal funding match, 57%. States might try to negotiate smaller expansions in the future, leaving them less exposed. It's unclear whether the White House would go along. Zero cost, free. Now, one can debate whether this is a strategy of sort of hiding the negative parts of a program that's having popularity difficulties anyway, whether it's venal, whether it's strategic, or whether it's a diagnostic problem.
My husband had this problem. We didn't like to talk about it. But every time he spoke about his favorite legislative achievement, it wouldn't come out quite right. It would be simple and definitive when he really just wanted it to be complex and nuanced. Of course, being a man, he didn't want to see a doctor at first. But finally, my girls and I talked him into it. And we couldn't be happier. Because his doctor said, Carexa.
Carexa is a breakthrough medical treatment in acute or chronic cases of PDS, programmatic derangement syndrome. High achievers defending or attacking proposed new programs in the public or private sectors are the most likely to suffer from PDS. Until now, the treatment was limited to bed rest and high doses of caffeine. But now, with Carexa, embarrassing moments of grotesque overstatement are gone forever.
My wife used to be on television all the time talking about death panels. Now, thanks to Carexa, that's all changed. I don't know what she's talking about now, because she's off the TV.
Carexa is not habit-forming when used repeatedly as directed for an indefinite period of time. Common side effects include turning to one side, walking sideways, inappropriate sidelong glances, unhealthy dependence on sidekicks, sudden loss of sighting, repetitive side swiping, excessive growth of sideburns. More serious effects can include death, loss of the power of speech, or a combination of the two.
Now, when my husband talks about his signature achievement, the nuance is there.
If you like your doctor, and he's in the narrow network, and you're current on your copay, and or if your state has signed on to the cost share for Medicaid expansion, you can probably keep him.
When my wife wants to say something now, she doesn't exaggerate. She doesn't blow things out of proportion. Maybe that's why she's not on TV. Thanks to Carexa.
If you can't afford Carexa, ask your doctor why. Carexa.
It's like a polygraph inside your head.
Maybe she should be taking Carexa too. Ask her doctor.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Deadline Seoul, South Korea, President Park Geun-hye apologized this week for his spy agency's alleged forgery of evidence used in charging a North Korean defector with espionage, ordering his embattled intelligence agency to make thorough efforts to reform itself. Park issued the apology during a cabinet meeting a day after prosecutors indicted three officials of the National Intelligence Service for their alleged role in the scandal. The director of the service also offered an apology earlier in the day. You know, just like we have intelligence people in this country apologizing for torture. Blues legend B.B. King, whose April 4 concert at Peabody Opry House was the source of international discussion in St. Louis after it was reviewed, has apologized for that night. His representative sent these words. B.B. King and his management had become aware of some criticism expressed following his performance at the Peabody Opera House. The performance was Mr. King's first after a four-week off-time period and was also preceded by a 24-hour, 1,600-mile bus trip from his home in Las Vegas. To complicate matters, he mistakenly missed a dose of his prescribed diabetes medication on the show day. This resulted in a performance that did not match Mr. King's usual standard of excellence. Simply put, it was a bad night, and Mr. King apologizes and humbly asks for the understanding of his fans. The helmsman steering the Seoul Seawall passenger ferry when it capsized and sank off the coast of South Korea has admitted making a mistake after he was arrested along with the ship's captain and third mate. The captain, Lee Jun-suk, faces five charges, including negligence. He says, "I am sorry to the people of South Korea for causing a disturbance, and I bow my head in apology to the families of the victims." He was not on the bridge when the ship got into trouble and has been heavily criticized after footage showed he was among the first survivors to arrive on shore. General Mills has apologized for its announcement of a new policy that would have had anybody who liked one of its products on Facebook or used one of its coupons waiving their right to sue if something went wrong. "On behalf of our company and our brands, we would like to apologize. We're sorry we even started down this path, and we do hope you'll accept our apology. We also hope you'll continue to download Product Coop. No, we're not going to do that. A KFC franchise in England has apologized after allegedly kicking a lesbian couple out for what's been described by customers as heavy petting. If it had been finger licking, they would have been allowed to stay. And top Los Angeles police officials this week apologized to their civilian bosses for not properly alerting them that officers had tampered with recording equipment in patrol cars to avoid being monitored. Oh, and one more. The diplomat who was president of the UN Security Council in April 1994 apologized this week for the council's refusal to recognize that genocide was taking place in Rwanda and for doing nothing to halt the slaughter of more than 1 million people. Sorry. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facility of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone via Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast from WWNO.org, SoundCloud, Sideshow Network, and iTunes. Free podcast. And it'd be just like starting to improve quality now, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO New Orleans for helping today's broadcast. The playlist of the music heard here on and the email address for this broadcast available at harryshearer.com. So are Cars I Talk t-shirts, collector's items to be soon. And me, I'm the Harry Shearer on Twitter. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from New Orleans.